to No Thank You Next. I'm Megan, and I talk about true crime stories that happen while dating.
And I'm Rachel, and I talk about true crime stories that happen while married.
Hello. Hi, guys.
Hi. Hi, everyone. Welcome back.
How was your week? It's only been a few days for us. We took a break between episodes and lived an entire life for two whole days.
For 2 days. And now we're back.
We are back. I forgot. I did want to bring up my freaking Saturday night.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Let's do it. Let's jump into your Saturday night.
I feel like we went on a tangent after us talking about my weekend. But
Oh, yeah. You were sending me pictures of who you were sitting next to. Oh, yes.
So
like, where are you?
I know. So my friends moved local to me, like LA time. They live like 10 minutes from me, so it's pretty close. And so they wanted to start exploring the area more, and there were some restaurants that I live by that I've wanted to try. So I gave some options, and then I walked and met them at this restaurant. And so we're sitting down and we're just chatting, and everything's outdoors in LA right now. So we are sitting there, and I'm like talking to her husband, and I look to my right and I see the guy from Girls, and I'm like, that's the guy from Girls. And they didn't watch the show, so I was in a presence of someone that did not give a shit, which you knew who he was, which I knew who he was
immediately.
Yeah. I literally went to the source. I was like, you're the only person that'll care. Like, here you go. Like, I was excited to see him, but also I just like, I feel like I would have been more excited to see Shoshana, like that. I would have like lost my mind. But he was like, it's like almost like you're seeing a degree away from Shoshana because they dated on the show,
right?
I guess. So anyways, what was his name?
His name in the show was Ray Plachansky, but his real name is Alex Karpovsky.
Yes.
But yeah. He plays Ray in the show Girls, and he's like a total asshole, but he's like one of my favorite characters.
He's so
on that
lovable.
Show.
Yeah. Like I in love the end him. Of the show, I feel like he really became such like a heartfelt character. And
completely. Completely. Yeah.
I was talking to them, it's Ray, I know, excited. But as we're like discussing that, and then we moved on to a new topic, and as we're talking, Regina King walks by with her husband.
That's so nuts.
I know,
that's so nuts.
And this restaurant is in my neighborhood where I walk my dog, so it's honestly, I will never dress like trash again, even though I did today. I looked like human garbage while walking the dog. But it's fair to say after 6 p.m. when that restaurant opens, I will be dressing in my prom dress from here on out.
Yes.
Like, of course, she's stunning and completely put together. She, like, was hiding inside of the restaurant, which technically wasn't really open. So... Mm-hmm. They, of course, had privacy, but it was just cool. It's just like, shit, my neighborhood is just like really popping.
I mean, that's seriously so cool. It's always fun to like see, I don't know. And like, you have to behave in a manner where it's just like, they're normal people. I don't want to intrude. I don't want to bother them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I am obviously a little starstruck at the moment. Like, this is
exactly
super cool.
Like, you just have to act cool. But yeah, it's
as if you see them every day.
I know, which it is kind of like, as lame as it sounds, living in LA, like I truly see a celebrity at least once a week. Never Regina King status, but definitely like the side characters of Girls type status. Or like a stand-up comedian from time to time. But yeah, like it's odd. Like it's weird that like, and it's not Hollywood. Like I don't live in Hollywood, you know? Everybody thinks Hollywood is where it's at. You got to go to those hipster neighborhoods, baby. That's where it's at.
You got to go to like Brentwood, or you have to go to like the side neighborhood.
If you want to see like the Real Housewives, sure, go over there.
Yeah, they're all over the place though, I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they bounce around in their shows. They're always like, we're over here, we're over here. Now we're in Newport. Yeah. Now we're up here. Now we're over here. It's like, Jesus. All right.
Yeah. I feel like, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people are in the Valley now. This is the most LA conversation ever. But for those of you that don't give a shit. But yeah, areas that you would typically think if you do not live here. Where I don't know what who I was just listening to or reading about. Gosh, I can't remember, but somebody was talking about how they moved to LA in like, God, who was it? But they moved to LA in the 70s. Oh, it was this guy from K-Rock, but he's like really famous in LA. He's from England. And he was being interviewed and he moved to LA in the 70s. He wanted a radio career and he moved on Sunset thinking like that's where it's at. Everybody lives in Hollywood. Oh. And I think that's the idea that a lot of people think where it's like mm-hmm. Chinese ramen theater is like trash, you know? And like, like the Walk of Fame is like everywhere and it's pretty gross. And like it isn't just on Hollywood Boulevard. I think there's a lot of misconceptions, but anyways, LA is gigantic.
Still super exciting.
Very exciting. Anyways, that's my very LA story.
That's good. I liked it.
But speaking of like the most like chuggy generalized
chuggy, you're really using that word now.
It's such a bad word, but God, does it explain everything about us. Like I'm such a chug. Like, let's be real. I'm a Disney adult that wears skinny jeans. Like, I try to not be chuggy, but I know there's so many things. Like the thing with boomers that's like I think millennials will like get on board with is like boomers are like in denial that they're boomers, you know, like they're in denial that they're making poor decisions. Whereas like millennials are like, yeah, I'm fucking chuggy. I love it. Like, I'm not into the side part. I like a skinny jean from time to time, but I own mom jeans. But like, I try to stay like current, but sometimes I end up going off the path of like Gen Z where I'm like wearing like peasant dresses with like not really cool cowboy boots that like Gen Z, I don't know. I have cowboy boots on the way, guys. Will I like them? Unknown. Gen Z is on my For You page on TikTok and I was influenced. I have cowboy boots on the way. Anyways, but Chuggy is like, I don't love the word because they're the ones that coined it, but it really does like make sense. Like we're real chuggy. Yeah, Rach. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't feel like I have an aesthetic that's like, I don't really have an aesthetic. I'm not in the point where like I'm trying too hard. I don't have a live, laugh, love sign in my house. I don't have anything that says girl boss on it.
That's not
true. I don't even use that trick.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. I feel like selfies, this might be confrontational / what's the other word? Not bipolar, polarizing. But I feel like selfies are chuggy.
Even though everybody does it?
See, here's the thing. Not everyone does it. What they do is they use mirrors or they use second phones to take photos of themselves. But full on top face, like how like, okay, I'm sure you've seen the videos too of how Gen Z takes photos or millennials take photos from above and Gen Z takes photos like head on or down.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a completely different thing. But I notice, like, when I follow certain influencers, they don't take selfies anymore. They do like the mirror pictures or videos, or they do the fake mirror photos where they have a second camera, but they have a camera in their hand. Have you seen?
Okay.
So it looks like they're taking a photo in a mirror.
I think so.
I don't know. Guys, start paying attention. You're going to start noticing there are not a lot of influencers that take selfies. And I feel like selfies are chewy.
I don't feel like I take selfies. Like if I do, they're always in the mirror. Like if you look at my Instagram stories or anything I've posted, it's always from a mirror.
Okay, so maybe
I don't do the facing me thing.
Girl, maybe you're on the same page as me.
I don't know.
But I feel like when I see, I don't think she listens to the podcast, but I have a friend. I don't know that she'll know who she is, but her entire fucking wall, Instagram wall. I'm not talking Facebook, yeah, but she probably double posts, is just selfies of herself.
Oh,
and it's like, like, get a life. Like, get a damn life.
So judgy.
I'm sorry. So it's chuggy to me. Like, I don't know. Like, how old are we? Get artistic, get creative, take a selfie in a different atmosphere. I don't know. Keep me interested. But yeah,
I don't know.
So
there are,
I feel like it's, yeah, all there are about a lot artistic. Of- Like nowadays, yeah, like when you're taking photos of yourself to post, it's about artistic ways to do it.
It depends on who you follow, though. It depends on your demographic, because there's a lot of people who they're not even influencers, but they're just super attractive. So their entire feed, or like people who do makeup, like their entire feed is like nothing but their face, but it's because they do.
Or
like,
exactly. That's completely different. If it's just
But I think it just depends. Cause what if you don't really have all that much to share, but you have a certain number of following? What if you're trying to get 1,000 followers and you know that, like, hey, this is what works. I have a pretty enough face here. It is. This is what I like to post. These are my squares. Welcome to my Instagram. It is all my face, maybe different angles. Maybe like this, maybe like that. Listen, maybe their
heads. I'll take a hand under the chin, pretend podium.
Like, yeah.
Pretend whatever. I'll take that fucking shit over just a selfie on the couch. Like,
yeah.
Like, that's all I'm saying. Get creative. If you don't want to be muted on my Instagram, just kidding.
Oh my god.
Anyways,
I don't care if we're friends. I will mute your ass. Not me. Megan will.
Rachel's too kind to mute. She's like, what if they find out?
I don't want there to be a conflict. Keep scrolling.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fine. I'll just scroll through.
It's fine. That's fine. You don't like me, just keep scrolling. I take that to heart.
Oh my God. But the moral of the story is, even though I judge others on selfies, I'm a choose and I'm proud of it. Is the moral of that story. I am going to choose. I will try my best. I don't want to be like 40 and like, I don't want to be 40 and I'm like, that's what younger kids do. Like, I don't want to ever, I'd like to stay as current as possible. Like, I enjoy to learn what's popular, what's going on. I never want to say to a younger person, like, oh, did you pay more for those rips in your jeans? Like, I never want to get to that place in my life. Like, I never want to get to that place in my life. So I will try my best, but will I wear skinny jeans from time to time? Yes.
Absolutely.
Will my hair part to the side accidentally? Yeah.
Yeah.
But so I'm a chug through and through, but I'm going to try my best. That's all I can do every day. Try my best.
Try your best.
To just stay hip and with it. You know, which I'm sure is a chewed statement.
I believe in you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Anywho,
just do your best. We have other topics for you guys too, not just the chewy ones.
Yeah, you know, we get off what's the word?
Off topic.
Oh my god.
We go on tangents. It's part of it. See, like this, it's a tangent. Yes.
By the way, my psychiatrist told me I needed to get on Ritalin.
Oh, really?
So I'm going to keep you guys posted on my journey. I have to take a drug test next week because people, of course, abuse drugs. But yeah, I was like, maybe that's what I need because I can never remember things. Constantly foggy. So anyways, that went back to like my, what is that word that I say 5 million times on this podcast? Maybe one day I'll just have it. When I start this medication, I'll just have it right there.
It'll be right there. Front and center.
Front and center. That's what you're looking
for, Megan. Here you go. We're just going to pull it forward for you.
The medication is right here. So anyways.
Oh, well, that'll be interesting. Yeah. Not like in a, not in, in a way that it's like, oh, okay. Like, it'll be nice to see how it benefits you and how it.
Exactly. Like, I'm curious.
Adapt I've heard with your day to day.
Yeah. I've heard so many stories of adults with ADD. Cause I was diagnosed as a child, 100% I had it, and I stopped taking medication. I fucking struggled through like high school and college. And I don't know why my parents let me stop taking like Ritalin. But I did, and I struggled so, so hard, and I still have those struggles now. Like, it all started because I was telling him that I've been having like really bad fogginess, and I don't know if it's because I'm tired. I mean, it's been consistent for a long time, but the last month I've been incredibly dyslexic. Like, I like went to my Airbnb and I put in the code, and I did it 5 times. I looked at it, and finally the 6th time that I went to go look at the numbers, I was like, oh, like it clicked that I had not. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, so I was telling him about that. And then I was telling him like, cause my therapist really tried to tell me that I didn't have ADD anymore. She like was like, no, I think that you just like have your phone. And I think that if you take breathing breaks at work, like it'll get you focused, all this stuff. You know how like, well, therapists are very like on the path of like, let's work this out. Whereas psychiatrists are like, what can I prescribe you? So I just finally asked my psychiatrist. I was telling him all these things, and I was like, look, I had ADD as a kid. He's like, yeah, let's try it out again. Let's see if like that'll like get you back on track. And I was like, okay, so I'm going to try
it. Like,
exactly. We're going to check in 6 weeks. So like I was saying, I've heard so many people with adult ADD, and they started taking Adderall, Ritalin, whatever it was. And all of a sudden it was like, they felt fucking whole again. Like, it was like, they were like, I was so lost before. And I'm just like, what if this is what gets me to my life finally, like, put a getting back together. Plus, I'm going to school at the end of the month. So I was like, no better time than now to try this out. If I'm going back to school, I'm so nervous. Because like I said, I really struggled through school, even if it's something I want to do. But anyways, I feel like I'm really unloading. Like,
I think it'll be good for you. No, that's fine.
But yeah, I'm very excited, needless to say. I'm hoping it triggers something in my brain. If it doesn't, then whatever. I don't know. I need to get to the bottom of what's going on.
At least you tried. Instead of glossing over it, you're like, okay, let's give it a shot. Let's see if
Exactly.
See if it helps.
Exactly.
It has the potential to be a benefit in your life. So why not?
Demundo. So if any of you out there think you have ADD, but you're not a drug addict, go see a psychiatrist, because people do abuse that medication.
But, yeah, that's true.
So, but if you need it, go get it. Go to therapy. Just go to therapy. even if you don't need it, just go. That's my final word. Now we have actual topics.
Yes we do. Well, I guess a decent segue to that, it would be to talk about Bo Burnham's Inside.
Yes.
Like, did you watch the whole thing, or did you not watch the whole thing?
I didn't watch the whole thing. I watched part, like maybe like I don't know, 20 minutes of it. And then, okay, of course, on TikTok, I've heard probably all of it.
All the songs. Yeah. Yeah. So Bo Burnham's Inside, it's on Netflix, and it's created and filmed by Bo himself. And he is a comedian, but he's a comedian who sings all of his jokes. Like, he plays guitar, he plays piano. He is extremely, extremely creative, but he created a Netflix special, and he has other Netflix specials that are on there that are his actual stand-up comedy.
Yeah. Have you seen his stuff before?
Yeah.
I love his other stuff. Like, his songs are so good.
They're so catchy, and they're so funny. I know.
Yes,
and exactly. We had talked about the movie Promising Young Woman in the past. Yeah. We brought that up. Megan watched it. I finally watched it. It was amazing. Oh my gosh. Well, Bo Burnham is actually one of the main characters in that movie. Yes. And there's quite a twist that goes along with his character. So
go watch it.
Promising Young Woman. Yes. Go watch that movie. But, Bo Burnham. So it's basically, you're basically watching a musical special. Like, everything that he does is a song, but he curates and creates and films and creates the lighting and creates all of the visual that you see. He put it all together, but he also filmed it while he was quarantining, while everything was shut down, while everyone was in the midst of the very beginnings of COVID. He was by himself, and this was probably something for him to like keep his mind in his hands.
Yeah, for sure. Because no one was performing,
nobody was doing anything
down. And it was like,
absolutely,
podcasts of comedians, like, they were so fucking depressed. Like, when your entire world,
he talks about it.
Yeah. When your entire world is stand up, and you realize that's like your whole personality is your career, that you do stand up. What the fuck do you do? So then they went to podcasts. Right. That's why so many podcasts came out during COVID. But like, Bo did this special by himself, which was like so creative, because
it was really,
what else
really
are you going to do?
Yeah. But like, he ends up, you see him kind of reach like a breaking point, and he is just literally telling the camera, like, I am not okay. And he goes through some hard mental struggles. Even the ending was kind of like, holy shit. Okay. Like, I could see the dichotomy between like leaving your four walls and getting outside, but also once you're outside, shit, I want to go back in those four walls. Yeah. Like, I'm not ready to like be exposed, but I'm ready to like get away from my circumstances right here at this point in time. It was super interesting. I don't know what I was really expecting. And I saw a lot of people watching it on TikTok, and like, they show at first, they're like, oh cool, yeah, I'm into this song, you know? And then near the end, it's just like, now I feel like I'm having an existential crisis because of what I just watched, because what he went through. Like, now I'm thinking about things in a different way. It was really, really cool. So I suggest you finish it. I think it's great. I watched it before. I watched it. I think I've watched it twice already, and I want to get Mike to watch it. Yeah. And then I just keep playing him all the stupid songs, and like, they're just so funny. I'm like, well, wait till you see the visuals that he did when he made the special. Like, the visuals are so much, they add so much his songs. They're so funny. They're so funny.
My God.
But yeah, Bo Burnham's Inside. Go watch it, guys.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
And then HBO came out with another limited series called The 100-Foot Wave.
Yes.
As you know, I'm like obsessed with surfing and the ocean, and I used to surf when I was younger, and I have a bunch of surf magazines that I had accumulated from high school years and all that business. But it's about big wave surfing, and it's incredible. And it's also a little terrifying. Like, it gives me a little bit anxiety watching it and trying to watch these guys surf these waves in like what you would consider unsurfable conditions. Like, it's insane.
So. Yeah. The first episode gave me severe anxiety, especially that woman that went out there. Yeah. And she's just
his wife.
PTSD. Is that who it was? I was barely.
Yeah, it was his wife.
I watched it the day I got home from Hawaii. So I was like incredibly exhausted and tired, but I needed something that I, you know, to like eat through dinner. And like, I was just in a weird place, but I didn't know that was his wife.
Yeah.
So he took his wife out there and then made her do that serve?
No, she wanted to. It was, and she said the conditions. Yeah. So the conditions weren't really great the day that they went out. But so it's Garrett McNamara. He's been a big wave surfer for many years.
Yeah.
And he was looking for the search to find 100-foot wave. Like, he wants to ride the biggest wave ever ridden. And there's this place in Portugal that, I mean, when you look at the currents and you look at the way that these waves break on shore, it is insane.
Well, there's a canyon underneath, right?
Yeah. He said it's like 3 times bigger than the Grand Canyon. Yeah. And that's where they can put boats to sit, because waves are not going to break there. Waves only break in shallow water. But if there's a big canyon there, that's where they can, you know, have the photographers and videographers sit in a boat. They can sit on that canyon area because their waves are never going to break, and they're not really going to go anywhere. They can sit there even though all the other waves are breaking on the other side of the island and the other side of that, like, lighthouse area.
When they explained that, I thought they said that there was no way to predict it, because the way the water goes through the canyon, it breaks in every which direction. Like, when typically you can be like, okay, this area is safe. I thought they were saying that location, but that place is safe.
No, it's the channel. So that particular place in Portugal doesn't have a channel. And so what surfers and consider a channel, it's the one place where waves do not break, because that part of the ocean is the deepest. Yeah. So waves will only break in shallow water. So if you're looking and you're watching the waves, trying to get a feel of like what's going on before you actually go out and go surfing, you see where the waves are breaking and you see where they're not. So that way you can paddle out in still water, in like water that's not breaking. And then, so you paddle out through the channel and then you turn. That way you can actually get in to start catching waves. So for this particular place in Portugal, the water is being pushed out through that weird little canyon and then pushed out. And that's why the waves go kind of crazy.
Yeah. But
the closest thing that these people have to a channel is that canyon. So that's what he's saying. This is the only place that they can go where the waves are not going to be breaking.
Yeah. Okay. Got it.
It's such a good show.
Yeah, it is really good. It's very interesting. The people that they're bringing into this, like the guys from Scotland, right?
Yeah.
Or is it Ireland?
It was Ireland.
Those guys were super cool. Oh my God. They were so cool. And this is the first time they've been able to like do something this amazing. Cause I mean, of course in Ireland, there isn't like tons of surfing.
No, there's some. Yeah, they do show some of the waves that they were able to get to. But yeah, it was pretty incredible. And yeah, they have like, because when I was growing up, Laird Hamilton was the only big wave surfer that I really knew about. Mm. And so they do talk about Laird Hamilton, but I don't know if he ever actually went to Portugal to go like surf these waves. But
yeah,
it's just, it's super interesting. It's super cool to see surfers.
And they tell you the history too.
Yeah.
Like, they were talking about like all the people that had passed. Like, and I had never heard of a lot of people. Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, of course we all know it's dangerous. The ocean is incredibly dangerous, but yeah, it's just very interesting. They're telling you history about like getting to this, like, and I think I watched the second episode, but I can't remember, but basically just watching it come together, like how more and more people are taking it serious is really cool.
It's super cool.
Yeah. So definitely recommend watching that. So we watched, or I watched the first episode when I got back from Hawaii, but while I was in Hawaii, I watched the premiered the same day was The White Lotus,
I still have to watch that.
Which they actually filmed in the town that we were in Maui, the first town that we were in. Yeah, because we saw a shot and I actually looked it up and they filmed in this hotel in Maui. They're supposed to be on a different island, but they filmed a hotel where
we
were.
Was it in Lahaina?
No, it was in Kahali. I can't remember the name of it. It's like starts with a K though. But the view of our beach was the same view of this shot that they had from the hotel, and we were like, "Wait a minute, those are the same windmills."
Was it Kihei?
Oh, Kihei. Yes, thank you.
I got married in Kihei.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. it's really like, it was just cool to watch it while we were there because they were like showing all the stuff. They never really leave the hotel. Like the entire thing is placed in the hotel, but like the shots of like other stuff, it's really like, it was just cool to be like, hey, we're here right now and watching this. But I recommend that show. Yeah. It's murder adjacent. You find out in the first episode that someone died at the Lotus Hotel, and it kind of like backtracks from there. Like it starts at the end of this guy's trip, and then you go, the rest of the episode and season is that you go back to when he gets to the hotel with his new wife. So yeah, so we don't know who dies, we don't know. So you're following, I kind of feel like it's like Clue, and I googled it to be like if anyone else thought this way, because I'm like, if someone dies, is it like the manager of the hotel in the bedroom with a candlestick? Like, I don't know. It feels very much like this. But you're following like a newlywed couple, a family that what the daughter brought a friend. You're following this woman whose mother passed away, and she's there to spread her mother's ashes. The people that work at the hotel. It's just so like, it's character driven 100%. There is literally nothing else going on in the show that drives the show. It is simply just what's going on with these characters' lives. But the girl from Euphoria, the one that ends up getting pregnant, she her sister is Judd Apatow's daughter.
She's girl.
Yeah, she's in the show, and every character she plays, I feel like she's such a brat. Like in everything, and she does it so well. But in this show, she plays like this like super duper brat, but it's really good. And Jennifer Coolidge is in it. The Rock's daughter, what's her name? That's not actually his daughter. It's from
I'm trying to look up the cast right now.
Connie Britton. Yeah, Daddario.
Oh yeah, she was his daughter in
So every time I think of her, I just call her the Rock's daughter. San Andreas.
Yeah, talk about a movie that'll give you anxiety. Yeah. Oh my god,
I know. Connie Britton is in it. It's a pretty good cast. It's really good.
I have a lot. Almost everybody. Wow. Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm super excited to check that.
Yeah. I mean, and cool. It's Hawaii. Why not just watch the beautiful scenery and wish you were there again?
Right?
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah, seriously. Never left.
I know. It's so beautiful there.
Ugh.
Love it. All right, guys. So is that it? Are those our topics?
Yeah, we're good. Yeah, I'm good.
We're ready to jump in now.
Yeah, I'm not on any new medications since I'm good. I've brought up all my grievances. Good.
That's it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so it's kind of weird because I mean, our whole podcast is about people who murder other people, like couples who get murdered. Uh-huh. And it never really ceases to amaze me that people legitimately believe that they could get away with murder.
Ugh, so it's stupid. Just, they made a whole show about it. They really did.
It's called How to Get Away with Murder.
By Chandra Rhimes, that angel.
Exactly. But then I think about like serial killers or missing people or cold cases. And then like we're brought back to the reality that people unfortunately really do end up getting away with murder. And I found an article from 2018 that says a person has about a 40% chance of getting away with murder. So it's still a pretty decent chance. I mean, there's so many people in the world and there's so many cases, and depending on where you live and your population, there's so many variables.
It feels too high.
It feels a little bit too high. So, I mean, people do get away with it, but the majority of the people who end up killing, like they're sloppy or their actions just become too big for them and they end up breaking down and they have to either confess or they tell somebody. So they'll end up confessing, or if they have a partner in crime, then the partner will start to worry and then they'll, you know, throw their partner under the bus and in order to save their own ass. And so that's kind of what happens in this true crime story that I have for you today. So it takes place in Williamsburg, Virginia. I introduce you to a woman named Nicole. Now, I couldn't find her maiden name. It could be for her ex-husband's privacy, but she and her husband, at the very young age of 18, they got pregnant out of high school, and then they got married in 1996. And after their child was born, there was a lot of tension in the home. You know, not a lot of 18-year-olds are thrilled with how hard it is to become a parent.
Yeah.
And it only got harder once Nicole became pregnant with her second child. Yeah. Her husband decided he didn't want this life that they created any longer. And so now divorce is on the table. I know. In 2001, Nicole quickly becomes a single mother of two. So now needs a job so she can support herself and her family. And she gets a job in retail. Soon after getting that job, she met a coworker named Nace, and he fell Nace, N-A-C-E. And he fell in love with her almost the moment he laid eyes on her. But Nicole at that time wasn't looking for a partner. She wanted to focus on her kids, but Nace was persistent. So Nicole gave in. She went on some dates. He got to meet her kids, and it really seemed to be destiny. So Nicole and Nace Houchin were married in 2007, and their relationship seemed perfect. Nace was a great dad. He raised her kids to be great kids. He treated Nicole like a queen, and she was able to quit her job and go back to being a stay-at-home mom fairly soon after they got married. So feeding and caring for a family of four, it puts strain on the family finances. So Nace decided, instead of having her get a job, he's like, I'll join the military for the pay raise and for the family benefits. And it seemed to be like the perfect move in his eyes, but it surprised Nicole, and she had an issue with it because she never wanted to be a military wife. She didn't want to have military in her family. She was just like, this is the one thing that I didn't want. And I married somebody that didn't have it. And now you're going to go into the military. Okay. Cool. 6 months after Nace joins the United States Army, he was deployed to Korea for a year, and then he was deployed to Kuwait. Nicole was very lonely with her husband overseas, and the distance was putting strain on her second marriage. Money was still a really big issue. So in 2013, Nicole was just like, okay, I don't know when Nace is going to come back. I need to get another job. So she got a retail job at the AutoZone. And that is where she meets John McKay. So she's still married. Things are still fine, but she ends up meeting a friend. Okay. John had been working at the AutoZone as his second job because his family finances are also strained. John is an Army staff sergeant who has been in the military and has been married to his wife, Dana, since 1993. They have a really nice home. They have dogs, no kids, but they're saving for retirement. They're just living their life. And, you know, after being married for almost 20 years, like their life and their marriage was kind of tepid. It just not a whole lot of romance, not a whole lot of excitement going on. And Dana had a lot of health issues. Her main issue was she had fluid draining in her brain through the rest of her body that made her extremely sick and extremely weak. So John was basically like her caretaker. He didn't mind, but there was no excitement in his marriage. He was just taking care of his sickly wife. Now Dana's medical bills, they forced John to get a second job. So that way they were able to stay, you know, above water. They can still pay for their house. They can still pay for her medical bills, and they can continue to live their life. But it was a bit hard on them too. So Nicole and John, they get to talking, and they realize that they have some things in their lives that are similar, and they're almost immediately attracted to each other. So their chatting becomes flirting, and then the flirting turns into exchanging phone numbers, where they text all the time when the other person's not at work. They email one another. They're just in constant contact. They both were so unhappy in their marriages that it was flattering to have someone on the outside pay attention to them, like to each other, and like legitimately enjoy each other's company. So you guessed it, when that happens, their flirty banter shifted into a full-blown affair. It was hot and heavy. John was enjoying the excitement he felt he was missing from his marriage, and Nicole loved the attention that he gave her. They were so into each other that one day John told Nicole that he was certain that the military was going to assign him to another base in the near future, but he wasn't ready to let her go. He told Nicole he would get a divorce from Dana so they could stay together because he wanted to move forward in life with her, and he proposed to Nicole.
What?
Bam.
Did he leave his sick wife just like fend for herself? Not to mention, like, all of this is bad in the military. Like, cheating and shit is a big no-no.
There's a lot. Yeah, exactly. So weeks later, John is starting to have remorse over his actions. He realizes,
I wonder why.
I probably shouldn't be cheating on my wife.
Yeah, with a woman that he just met over his, like, this woman. He's like, oh my God, terrible.
Like, oops, all of a sudden his conscience comes into play.
Yeah, whatever.
It's like that Eminem song. Yeah. His conscience comes into play. It's like, okay. Here, bad timing, but okay.
Yeah, for real.
So not only is he cheating on his sick wife, but he also proposed to basically a stranger because the sex was so good.
Yeah.
Like, you don't even know this woman. And you don't know her background. You just know the fun stuff. You
exactly. We know this story as soon as they become like, there is no like cheating. The excitement will leave because everything is like normal. And then you're going to have so many regrets.
Exactly. Yeah. Once it's just like, oh, it's no longer secretive. We're allowed to be with each other. It's
feeding off of.
All right. Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's what it's like. Yeah. That's what it's feeding off of.
Yep. He knew it was wrong. And so he made the decision to break off the affair with Nicole. And John said he wanted to rekindle what he had with his wife. Even though Nicole was heartbroken and extremely angry with John, she agreed it was best, and she too would put her best foot forward to do her best in her own marriage. Life moves on. Everyone's happy. The end.
No.
Yeah, right. Well, I wish that was how this story ended, but it's about to get a hell of a lot worse.
Oh, no.
July 26, 2013, John leaves Dana at home to go visit his family in New York. And so Dana's at home. She's taking care of herself while John is gone. It was only going to be for like a couple of days. So it was doable.
Oh, okay.
Dana's mother makes a few attempts to call Dana to see how she's doing on her own, but Dana never answers.
Oh God.
The following day, Dana's mom decided to call a neighbor and ask if they can check in on Dana since she hasn't been able to get a hold of her. The neighbor's like, sure, no problem. I have a spare key to the house and I'll just head on over. The neighbor knocked on the door, no answer. So they use their spare key. They enter the house and it was a ransacked disaster, just a total wreck. I would have just like called out for Dana. Like I would have called her name a dozen times. And if I didn't hear her respond, I would have just called 911.
Yeah, for sure.
Walking into a home that's trashed, that's normally kept extremely clean is very scary. So
yeah,
that's not what this neighbor did.
Oh God.
This neighbor decides to head on upstairs, check for Dana. You know, maybe she's beat up or something, or maybe she's not even there. So she just went to see, you know, what's going on upstairs. Uh-huh. And they saw that the bedroom door was kicked in. And after that neighbor walks inside, they find Dana's lifeless naked body on the floor. And the bedroom was so bloody, it looked like a scene out of a horror movie.
Oh no.
Authorities arrive to tape off and examine the scene, and Dana is pronounced dead. Her body was so badly beaten. There were multiple stab wounds, defensive wounds as she fought for her life. And she fought so hard that her ring finger was completely severed and found on the floor away from her body.
Oh my God. It was a
vicious, vicious attack.
What if that was
the crime scene was.
But what if that was like a thing? Like, what if that was like a.
Like. If that was like a mark of
who did it. Yeah, like your ring finger.
Yeah.
I've never fought with my ring finger. So what if it's
I don't know.
It's like, I know, you don't even get it any, you don't get that finger anymore. You go to his evil, right? Vicious.
Mm-hmm. It could, it very well could have been that, okay, particular aspect of it was never proven that it was part of it, but at, okay, the same time, it
was just a detail. Okay.
Yeah. So, detectives see that the garage door lock was tampered with and it was most likely opened with a credit card, and the look of the home looked to be a home invasion. Dana's locked bedroom door was obviously kicked in. Like, there was a giant, like, hole where, like, not a complete through hole, but definitely a lot of damage on the door to show that it had been kicked in. So whoever entered the house was thinking that, you know, maybe it's vacant because John was out of town. Maybe they noticed that the car was gone and they thought the house was going to be empty.
And
they broke into the bedroom thinking, like, okay, we can steal some shit out of the master bedroom, but Dana just happened to be there. It just, there's a lot that they're thinking of what happened. And the only forensics evidence that was found was a piece of blue latex glove that was found underneath Dana's body, but there were no other forensic clues, nor was there any other evidence that, you know, anything had even been stolen in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Dana's attack was so violent that it made detectives believe that it was a personal attack. And so they immediately think, we need to question the husband. But when they call him, they learn that he is in New York and he is just devastated by the news. He comes home immediately, answers any and all questions, and advises detectives that there's no one out there in the world who would want to hurt Dana. Detectives decide to interview the neighbors to see if they saw or heard anything out of the ordinary the night of July 27th. It was the 26th and they found her on the 27th, but they didn't really have... The neighbors really didn't have much to say about that night. There was really nothing out of the ordinary that they saw or heard. But what they did have to say was, a few weeks before all of this happened, Dana had confided in a couple of her close neighborly friends about a number of things. And one of them was that Dana had gone to a funeral like weeks ago before this whole thing happened. Mm-hmm. She went to a funeral and she was gone for maybe about a day or so. And when she came home, she found John washing their sheets, something that her husband of 20 plus years has never done. Not only that, but Dana found groceries and wine coolers in her fridge that she would never buy. They never had that in the house. So why now? Why on this one weekend while she's gone? She figured out that John had a woman over and she confronted him about it. And he admitted, yes, I had an affair with my coworker, Nicole. And Dana was rightfully pissed off that another woman had been in her home and in her bed while she was out of town. Ugh. Not only that, after she found out about the affair, then John told Nicole, hey, my wife knows about the affair. And then Nicole starts harassing Dana and started sending her threatening messages. Yeah. And she's like, you need to divorce your husband. He doesn't love you anymore. He doesn't want you anymore. Like, was threatening her all this shit. Yeah. So Nicole isn't like the sweetest little piece of pie. Like, she is now starting to become a problem to Dana. So that's not looking good for John and Nicole. Am I right?
No,
not good at all. John is brought back in for continued questioning, and Nicole was also brought in since detectives learned about the affair and the threats. Nicole was pretty tight-lipped in her interrogation, but John admitted, yes, the affair happened, but it was 100% over and done with before he even left on his trip to New York. The detectives don't believe that they're getting all the information, and their suspicions are proved to be right as a military friend of John comes forward with a piece of evidence. And this is so nuts. This is like, it's like sloppy, but at the same time, it's like, really? You see, this man, he's a friend of John's, his phone broke and John let him borrow one of his old phones that he no longer uses. John assured his friend all of his personal info was wiped off the phone. It was completely clean and he could use it for as long as he needed to. While the friend was attempting to set up his email account on the phone, he saw John left his email logged in and saw all these email messages between John and Nicole, and they were all recent. And like, this dude knows that John's married to Dana. So why is he emailing a girl named Nicole? Yes. Well, he decided to look at, I mean, a little bit of invasion of privacy, but I mean, good thing he did it.
Yeah.
He ends up reading some of the emails, and there were just something about them that did not sit right with him. So he turned over the phone to authorities and was like, hey, check out these emails between John and Nicole.
Yeah.
The emails show that the affair was going on long after John said they were over and done with. They would write out their fantasies about living a life with Dana removed from the picture. And then there was a sinister message from John asking, will she be gone before I get back? I'll forever be in debt to you every day. That was on July 24th, just days before Dana's death. Oof. Dana said she was trying, or, and then Nicole said, I'm trying to make it happen ASAP, which is proof that they were involved with the murder of Dana McKay.
Ugh.
It just gets even crazier.
Oh God.
So John and Nicole are separately questioned about the emails, and Nicole says they're nothing but harmless chats. It's nothing serious. They were just like, oh yeah, I just wish that your wife would go away so we could like run away together. Blah. John says he didn't have a hand in harming Dana. He wouldn't do a thing like that, but Nicole could have. He admitted that during the affair, he proposed to Nicole, but when he later withdrew his proposal to stay with Dana, Nicole was livid. He broke off the proposal because Dana found out, and Dana had backed him into a corner and was going to blackmail him.
Yeah.
If John didn't stop the affair and break it off for good, she was going to speak with his commanding officer to advise him that John had violated their moral code by having an adulterous relationship.
Yep.
If John was found guilty, he would lose his pension, be put in military prison for a year, stripped of his rank, and his reputation would be completely ruined. Mm-hmm. John would lose everything that he worked for his whole life. So he's like, yeah, it's not worth the risk. I'll go ahead and I'll break it off with Nicole.
Interesting.
During this time, when Nicole was like, yeah, I'll put my best foot forward too and work it out with my husband. She had no real plans to work on her relationship with Nace because he's overseas. Mm-hmm. But before they went overseas, I mean, they were consistently fighting, and allegedly before he left, he and Nicole were already sleeping in separate bedrooms. Nicole had built this world in her head that was a life with John, and she didn't want to let that go, especially since she didn't even have a marriage to work on. It was already done and over with. John mentions to detectives that yes, he received a call from Nicole while he was away in New York, and it was Nicole telling him it's done. He explained in his mind, he's thinking, okay, she got the hint. Our relationship is over. It's done. But then when he received the phone call from investigators about Dana's death, he realized it was Nicole speaking in code about killing his wife.
Right.
Detectives don't buy it. And both John and Nicole are arrested since the email conversation told a different story. So get this. So John is out of town. He didn't kill Dana. And yeah. Nicole is a like petite little thing. And she couldn't have caused all that damage to Dana. So detectives are thinking there's a third person involved. Yeah. But John and Nicole don't say anything about there being a third person. Hmm. So a little time goes by. September rolls around. And on the 17th, a police officer pulls over a man for driving a stolen truck. Hmm. The truck is searched and they find a letter. A confession letter in regards to Dana's murder. What? The man who's arrested, Nace Houchin, Nicole's husband. They probably thought that he was driving a stolen car because it might have been like Nicole's truck and then he was driving it, but he wasn't registered to drive it. And like he came back home from being overseas, but didn't tell anybody. Or like maybe Nicole was already locked up and then he got home and was like, that's weird. Nobody's home.
Yeah. And interesting. I feel like Nicole would have called. Wait, so this confession letter is fake, right? Or did he actually do it? Because my thought was like, it's fake and Nicole framed him. But there really has to be a third person. So, but why would he? Okay. Sorry. Go ahead. Now I'm so confused.
Now there's questions. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So his ass is brought in and questioned about the letter. And Nace says, hey, it's not what it looks like. It's fake. He says he had an emotional moment and wrote the letter to take the heat and the blame off of his wife. And he was going to take the fall for her. No. But then later realized that's a terrible idea.
What the fuck?
This dummy was living in paranoia, thinking he was going to be arrested any day because he forgot to destroy the letter. He didn't remember where it was. And detectives are like, yeah, okay. Like, Nicole was cheating on you with John, but yet you want to help her?
Yeah.
And they also looked at him, like they looked at him up and down, and they're like, also, you have the build and the military training to inflict the damage that was done on Dana. Mm. So maybe this letter isn't actually a fake.
Okay.
Well, all these people cannot keep it in their damn pants because it turns out Nace was cheating on Nicole just the same.
Oh, Jesus.
And his girlfriend is kind of the helpful answer that detectives need at the time. She's the helpful clue. So Nace tells detectives who his girlfriend is, and they go and they question her. And she said that after finding out that his wife was arrested for this crime, she straight up asked Nace, hey, did you have anything to do with it? And he never gave her a straight answer.
Oh, shit.
And she was like, okay, that's weird. A couple of weeks later, Nace shows up at her house in tears, confessing that he killed Dana. So the girlfriend gives the statement, and Nace needs to start talking about what happened that night. What happened to Dana? Who were you with? How did this happen? Why are you involved? Like, so many questions.
Yeah.
So detectives, they leave Nace sweating it out to think about what his future holds as he's, you know, being held.
Yeah.
And they go and they search Nace's and Nicole's house. And so there's no evidence inside that they had anything to do with the murder, but outside on their lawn, they found a piece of blue latex glove that matched the piece that was found underneath Dana's body.
Yikes.
So Nace is arrested and charged with Dana's murder. Detectives believe the plan to kill Dana was hatched the night after John was confronted with the affair about and telling his commanding officer all that business. John had too much to lose and he was still completely attached to Nicole. So they also believe that they were able to somehow recruit Nace in this whole murder plot before John left for New York. But how did they do that? Months after Nicole's arrest, her lawyer tells the detectives that she has some things to say. She has some things she wants to get off her chest. She says, yes. The plan to kill Dana was put into motion after Dana found out about Nicole and John. And since Nace and Nicole no longer wanted to be married, the cheating aspect wasn't really an issue for them. And Nicole tells Nace, hey, we need to get this guy's wife out of the picture. And when she's gone, we can give you $20,000.
I knew it was money.
Get that money. The money for his involvement will come from Dana's life insurance policy.
Ugh.
Of course.
Tale as
but
all this time.
That's not all. There is another person involved.
What? The girlfriend?
Yeah. No. No.
Oh.
A completely different, like, I can't believe you convinced this guy to be a part of your scheme. They managed to talk their coworker, who also worked at the AutoZone, Gregory Crawford, they talked him into being a part of the plan. They're like, hey, all you have to do is help us break into this lady's home and like mess up her stuff and make it look like a home invasion. Just that's all you have to do.
Why?
Why
did they need him?
Because he thought he was also going to get $20,000 too. Like, oh, I just got to break into this lady's house. Like, cool. Like easy money for me. Like I just work at the AutoZone, but now I could get like a whole bunch of money.
Man.
If I just help you with this one
thing. Probably. Yeah. It's your salary.
And they probably didn't tell him that they were planning on killing someone.
Yeah.
They probably just told him like, hey, just come and like mess up this lady's house with us. Yeah. I don't know, but somehow they managed to rope another person into this, which is completely fucked up.
Wow.
So John tells Nicole how to break into his house without being seen, go through the garage. And he tells her, just use a credit card and you'll be able to open the door if it's locked and just come on inside. Nicole and Greg stay downstairs and stage the home invasion while Nace goes upstairs with a breaker bar, which is like a socket wrench and a knife. He kicks in the door and he finds Dana getting out of the shower and he starts attacking her and it is relentless until Dana stops moving.
Yikes.
After the murder, Nicole and Nace went to Gregory's house where Gregory allegedly took the clothes that they were wearing and the weapons that they used. And he burned their clothes and then he threw the weapons into the James River while he was on the Jamestown ferry. He was like, I could just dispose of all of this. Like, don't even worry. So I guess, yeah, he did know that they were getting murder. Because he got rid of everything. Greg was doing all he could to protect them all. And he really thought he was going to get paid from all of this involvement. Nicole doesn't think that her punishment should be as harsh because she wasn't the one who actually killed Dana, but she was involved. Mm-hmm. Oh, and according to Nicole, the whole entire plan was put together by John. So even though John was out of town, John came up with this idea.
I mean, I don't know.
Gregory Crawford is arrested. Yeah. He's arrested 18 months after the event due to the confessions of his involvement. And he is charged with a conspiracy to commit murder. So Nicole's like, if I'm going down, everybody's going down. 18 months later, I bet you he thought he was like safe. And then all of a sudden,
of course. Arrested.
Yeah. John admits to conspiring to kill his wife and expresses remorse for what he's done. Both John and Nicole make deals with prosecutors. They agree to plead guilty and testify against Nace in order to avoid trial and avoid the gas chamber.
Wow.
In 2015, everyone pled guilty to their crimes of murder and conspiracy to commit murder. John, Nicole, and Nace were all sentenced to life in prison, but will serve less time as part of their plea agreements. John will serve 28 years and 2 months. Nicole will serve 23 years and 11 months. Nace will serve 40 years and Greg will serve 20 years, 3 of those years suspended. The sentences are given, but that doesn't excuse the terrifying and painful death that Dana had to endure. John was interviewed for about 20 minutes back in 2013, and you can watch it on YouTube. And he talks about how being in prison will never be long enough to pay for the death of his wife. And with that, we wish that poor Dana McKay rest in peace.
Wow.
Crazy. Terrible. So crazy. I didn't watch the whole conversation. It is 20 minutes, but I kind of skipped through it. And like, John's just, he talks about, like it was an affair. We used to just, you know, talk and fantasize about being together. And the interviewer is just like, why would you tell someone that, you know, is unhappy with your wife, who's been threatening your wife to divorce you? Like, why would you give her information on how to enter your house? What, like, why would you do that? And he's just like, I don't have any answer for that. I don't know, but
he's not innocent. Get the fuck out of here.
No, but I can't believe that Nicole was able to talk her
so crazy
into killing someone else that he didn't even know. He doesn't know this woman. Like,
so
how do you convince somebody to do that for you?
Yeah. Like, truly. And it's not like he was in love with her. Like, he was having an affair too.
Just say, fuck you. No, I'm not helping you. I'm going to live my own life. Bye. I'm so out. Wild. Drop the mic and go away and don't cause harm to someone that you've never met. You don't even know, have nothing to do with.
For real.
What?
Wild.
I don't know. It blew my mind. And the fact that they got their coworker to help. What's going through these people's minds?
Just a bunch of dum-dums.
Just a bunch of dum-dums.
Like, it has to
for
be.
For real.
I can't imagine. Like, wow.
Stunned.
Truly yeah. stunned. Wow.
Idiots.
That was a great story, though. I've never heard it. Never. I was on the edge of my bed. I was laying down the entire time, ready to just fall right off.
Sit up straight. Just wait. Oh my God. I know. There's more. Yeah.
What? That was wild.
Such an Eddie story. I had never heard of that story either. It blew my mind. I was like, these fucking people.
I feel like I had so many preconceived ideas of where I thought it was going. And then I was just not at all. Wow.
Right. Shock. When you think you're on the proper path.
Yes. Yes.
Nope.
Completely different. Wow. Wild.
Your questions were good though. Like.
Because it's like.
And I wonder if Nace cut off her finger on purpose.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
Like I kind of like think that was intentional. Because how, of all 10 fingers, how this one, like this one is not easy to get to. Like if anything, if someone chopped, it would be like their hand.
Yeah.
And the pinky too. So it was just like, I don't fight with this finger like forward. I don't know.
No. But it was clean off.
Yeah. I think clean. That was on purpose.
That's fucked up. These people. Yeah, where do we get these people?
Ugh, get them off this planet. Get rid of them.
Just get rid of them. I know. So nuts. Nutty butters. That's my crazy story I have for you. That's
all we have for you. And I have to go put away a month's worth of laundry. I have been truly, I put away some stuff. And then as you can see in this corner. Right here is a ginormous
hamper of
clothing. And then I went to my storage
after
unit.
I go somewhere. Even if I'm just gone for like a weekend, it takes me so long to unpack my stuff. Yeah. I just don't do it. It takes me forever.
At a certain point, I'm like, I hate living out of luggage, but you know. Oh gosh.
Don't play it yet, okay? It won't work.
No.
Okay, I'll help you with it in just a second. We're finishing up, okay?
Okay. I'll leave it right here for you.
Okay. You want to say come back next week for a
we'll see
a
you next
horrible
week
story.
For another. Yeah. Say
come
we'll
back
see
next
you
week for another horrible story.
And then goodbye. Tell her to say goodbye.
Say goodbye.
Goodbye.